Welcome to Dudes on Movies, a podcast where dudes talk about movies. I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And today we're discussing 1996's Celtic Pride, directed by Tom DeSergio and starring Daniel Stern, Dan Aykroyd, and Damon Wayans. But before we do that, let's talk about what we've been watching. Dave, what have you been watching?
I watched The Battle of Algiers. It's, of course,
classic.
An amazing and important movie, you know, about fighting against colonialism. But I found out something about it.
Oh, yeah?
Something disturbing.
Oh, no.
Not about the movie itself, but something surrounding the movie.
Okay.
In 2003, the film was screened at the Pentagon by U.S. leaders to educate them on how to handle civilians who fight back against an occupying army.
Oh, come on.
You know, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Bush.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. In other words, our top defense officials watched it and essentially rooted for the French.
I'm not surprised.
No.
No. Yeah.
But it is.
That W did that?
I guess I didn't expect more from the Bush administration.
Yes, but you didn't expect that?
But I didn't expect this. Yeah, like full on for them to root for the bad guys in a movie.
Yeah. Well, they didn't screen Rambo 3. I know that.
Yes, that's true.
We know that for sure.
Exactly. They missed that one.
Really?
Oh, man. But
still a good movie, though.
Still a fantastic film. See the film, guys. It's it's an essential historical document, and it obviously still makes very powerful people nervous. So, yeah.
Yes,
seek it out.
Yes, it does. Awesome. I watched something a little lighter from 1992, Death Becomes Her.
I love that
movie. The classic Robert Zemeckis dark comedy.
Yeah.
Got Bruce Willis, Goldie Hawn, Meryl Streep. They're all at the top of their game in this film.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, everybody, it's a love triangle that takes place in Hollywood, and it gets deadly, but there's some magical happenings going on. It's a little fantastical. Things get out of hand. It's basically a satire on Hollywood vanity, mm-hmm. how everyone wants to be young and beautiful and relevant for all eternity and the lengths they will go to keep it.
Uh-huh.
It is sharp and biting. And it's awesome.
It is. A few months back, Dinosaur Dracula posted a screen grab of Meryl Streep drinking that pink potion.
Yeah.
Which does look delicious.
It does.
You know,
and
like you just...
It's like standing on that little platform.
Yes, exactly. And when Isabella Rossellini makes her speech about it, like not only does it look like a nice, like good flavored drink.
Yes.
I'm ready to go. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, let's do this.
Dude. First off, you got Isabella Rossellini telling you to drink it.
Exactly.
That's all I need.
I know.
I don't care
I
what it is.
That's true. Yeah, you're already there.
I'm there.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's a great dark comedy from the early 90s and got some very good special effects for the time.
Yeah.
They look a little cheesy nowadays, but they're still pretty good.
And they're kind of still horrific, which I like.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
And I love Goldie Hawn's eyes in this.
Oh, man, I know.
They're like deadly looking.
Yes. And I love that Bruce Willis is kind of a dumbass.
Yeah, he's a dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yep.
That mustache is nice.
Right.
All right, Dave. So now let's talk about Celtic Pride. Why don't you give everyone a synopsis?
Sure. This is a 1990s comedy in which the Boston Celtics find themselves one win away from an NBA title, and two obsessive fans decide to kidnap the Utah Jazz's star player to ensure victory for their team. I said it's a comedy, but it's also like a claustrophobic human drama.
Kind of, yes. It's a little there.
Right. And it's also a cautionary tale about wasting your life by basing it only on one thing. It's got some very funny moments, and I think we'll have a lot to say about it and a good time talking about it. So let's go.
Yes, we will. This is a Scott childhood favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it probably 30 times, I'd say.
Nice.
I don't know. So my brother and I, we grew up watching this and quoting it. We still quote it to this day.
Right.
It's an even game. We say that all the time. So, yeah, I've got a lot to say about this movie. I've been wanting to talk about it for a long time. I'm really glad.
Right. Good.
So the movie kicks off and we meet our main characters, right? It opens up with Daniel Stern yelling at a bunch of players on a basketball team. You just hear the audio,
mm-hmm.
and you see him in the shot, you know, telling everybody, hey, you're going to make this bounce pass to Kevin at the top of the key, and then you're going to go backdoor. You know, he's using all these basketball terms.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he's coach in a kindergarten class. Yes. It's at some grade school.
Very little kids.
And these kids only want to go jump on the trampoline. They don't want to listen to this guy.
Right.
And he lets them jump. So that's this guy. He's obsessed with basketball.
Yeah.
He's doing evil coaching on children. That's how obsessed he is.
Yeah, I know. And he's like a typical troubled guy who's like a frustrated former athlete.
Yeah.
You know, who... We're told that he had like a pretty decent high school career that didn't go anywhere, like in college or anything.
Right.
And it, man, there are so many of him
right
in the world.
Yeah.
Like just the whole planet is dotted with them.
Yeah.
These guys who wanted to be athletes and they didn't make it. And now they spend all their time, you know, like completely obsessed with sports,
yeah,
you know, professional
living
sports.
Living vicariously through a professional sports team.
Yes.
And I mean, they lay it out right away. His wife comes in, Carol, played by Gail O'Grady here.
Yeah.
She spells it out right here in this scene, basically. Hey, I'm getting divorced from you now because you're living in the past and you can't not obsess about the Celtics.
Right. Right.
I can't stand you. You're in a good mood when they win and a bad mood when they lose. It's not healthy.
Oh, man. It's just like...
Yeah.
He aggressively defends himself.
Yeah.
You know, and
he does in front of the children.
Exactly. Yes. He really like gives her a good going over about his love of the Celtics and why it's valuable and, you know, why yeah it makes him happy. And like he can't understand. Honestly, you could watch the Celtics every night of your life. You could get away with doing that as long as when the game is over, you put it on a shelf.
Right.
You know,
you don't let it control your life.
No. I'm so happy these days, because I let my hardcore sports fandom go.
Yes.
I still watch sports a lot, but I don't have a team anymore in any sport, and it has made my life so much better.
That's awesome, Dave.
You know?
Yeah. For everyone out there, we all know Dave's knowledge on movies is, you know, immeasurable. His sports knowledge is the same.
Right.
I don't know if it's still up to par. I'm assuming it is.
It is, but yeah. Yeah.
So he's the guy.
Right.
So what do you think about the sports in the movie? Like the basketball in the movie?
So it's good.
Okay.
It is the staging of the basketball itself is very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed with the level of detail they got into, particularly with like, you know, watching Damon Wayans come off of screens and, you know, when he's doing ball hog stuff, his passing toward the end
yeah
is very accurate. I mean, it looks like they really took some time to, like, you know, draw up some plays.
Yeah.
And, I was impressed with the basketball. Like,
yeah,
nobody looks like they don't know what they're doing out there.
Right, yeah. It doesn't look like it's a movie.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And it was like, I remember like in about 1987, I became, like you said about my sports knowledge, I became totally obsessed with baseball, football, and basketball.
Yeah.
So like this era of the NBA is familiar and comfortable to me too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I spent hours drawing the various logos of like every team in all
yeah
three sports. And in elementary school, basketball was the go-to game for all of us, too, you know? It was the easiest one to play on recess and PE.
Yeah.
The cheapest one. And, I mean, I never played organized basketball, but I played a ton of basketball.
Yeah,
until
too
the point where I was very good, you know? And you just become good at it.
I was always really good at shooting.
Yeah.
But I'm a short guy, everybody.
Mm.
I was never the tallest kid in school.
Right.
So I couldn't play, like, one-on-one or two-on-two. Like, I sucked.
Oh, okay.
I could beat you at horse.
Yeah,
but
sure,
that was about it.
I got you. Right.
Yeah, so he's obsessed. He's losing his marriage, and it's his fault.
Right.
And we meet Jimmy, played by the great Dan Aykroyd in
yeah
this film.
Yeah.
He's watching a Bruins game in this big mansion, right? He's got, like, beer cans on the table. You know, he's yelling at Cam Neely to score and everything.
This is a great introduction.
He is the most hardcore Boston fanatic out there.
Yeah.
And we know the Boston fans are insane. This guy is the leader.
Like, yes, yes, exactly. This guy is, like, way over. And, I mean, Boston sports fans have always been a menace because they're so neurotic and entitled.
And they like it.
They do. And
they know it and they like it.
And at this point, Like, yeah, they were really like this. Like, we haven't won an NBA title in 10 years. What gives, man? You know, I mean, like, never mind that you were present and alive for three titles in the 80s, and that overall the Celtics had at least twice as many as any other franchise. No, forget all that. It's been too long. We want another one right now.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
The fucking... The nerve of you people.
I remember when the Blues finally won after 52 goddamn years.
Exactly.
Boston was mad because they didn't have three championships that year.
And I mean, like, I'm tired of hearing about the goddamn Red Sox.
I know, right?
Yeah, Jesus. So, you know, I understand that, like, you went 86 years without a title. Well, cry me a fucking river. You had the Patriots, and you had the Bruins, and you had the Celtics.
Yeah.
And eventually now you do have the Red Sox, because in 04 they broke through, and now they've won multiple titles since then.
Yep.
I Boston sports fans, I'm sorry if you're out there, but I don't like you. You know, I hope you like us, but we can't do sports together.
Sports rivalry is a fun thing, right?
Yes.
It doesn't get serious ever, right? Not like in the movies.
No, certainly not.
But it turns out Jimmy is in a mansion where he's supposed to be fixing the toilet, because the owner comes in and is like, "What the hell are you doing?" And he says, "I'm just taking a break ski watching the game."
A break ski?
I'm like, this guy. So he has to fix this guy's toilet, and he calls his grandma and makes her put the game on the phone while he's replacing the float. Like, this guy's insane.
That is the most impractical use of a cellular phone.
Doesn't he have that portable television that he could just set up?
He's got that with him. Yeah, the Watchman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Watchman's awesome.
Yeah.
And I keep saying he's insane, but he's lovable, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
He's not like a bad guy,
right?
He's like kind of a, not like a doofus, like he just is obsessed with sports, and that's it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the Boston sports fans that I rail against are mainly, like, kind of the more public figures who are always out there complaining. I mean, like, you know, Dave Portnoy is pretty high on the list. That guy's a fucking tool for a lot of reasons. But, like, him being, like, all about Boston sports, it's just, like, it makes it even worse.
He's not going to listen to us anymore now because you said that.
Well, exactly. You know what?
Great.
Because fuck you, Dave.
Anyway, now we meet Lewis Scott, played by Damon Wayans. He's the all-star Michael Jordan surrogate, basically.
Right.
You know, he's the guy who does it all.
The best player in the
NBA.
He's
the best player. He's carrying the team, basically, or that's what he says.
Yeah.
He might have been, actually.
Yeah.
But you can't just carry a team. You got to have at least some good players with you, too, right?
Yeah, you do. And, like, you don't win a championship when it's just a one-man team. Like, Michael Jordan himself found that out in the 80s.
Yeah.
It wasn't until they drafted Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant, and they had to, like, overcome the Pistons after three tries that they eventually broke through. It wasn't until he had an actual team around him that they won titles.
Exactly.
You know.
But Lewis Scott doesn't see it that way.
Right.
When we first meet him, he's doing a Nike commercial.
Yeah.
And he's like... it's a totally perfect 90s commercial for Nike.
Right.
It's all about the bad attitude and how cool I am. And he says, "I don't want to raise your kids" at the end of the commercial.
Yes.
It's so funny.
It's a direct shot and a similar commercial where Charles Barkley, you know, I am not a role model.
Exactly.
It was a very polarizing commercial at the time, and a lot of sports writers were busy clutching their pearls over it because they remembered a time when athletes played for the love of the game. Yes, these guys make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I somehow never hear anyone complaining about the greed of the owners, the people who make a ton of money. And honestly, man, my only beef with the comedy of this movie is that, like, Lewis Scott himself is a bit of a straw man.
Yeah.
It's a writer's idea of what a selfish athlete is.
It's spelled out to a point here.
Yes.
Like he is at the game in the huddle and he's not even standing there. He's just like, everyone's like, 1, 2, 3, jazz. And he goes, jazz.
Yeah.
You know, he's walking away. What an asshole.
It would never happen.
And his teammates are calling him out. And Christopher McDonald is calling him out.
Right.
Playing the Coach Kimball character in the movie.
Yes.
He's really great as the coach. He's always just like hyper stressed out about his relationship with Lewis Scott.
Yes. Yes. And he's wearing a really awesome sweater in practice.
Yeah.
It's that jazz sweater with it looks like a a big winter coat that you'd wear in like Ireland, but it's got a Utah Jazz logo on the lapel. It rules.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. So we've got our characters, right? And they have a game. Game six is tonight, right?
Right. It's game six of the NBA Finals.
Yep. So they go to the game. They start trash talking. They've got like courtside seats, basically.
Right.
And these guys, you could tell, they're at every game.
Yeah.
Everyone around them knows them. They know everyone in the seats. Mm-hmm. These guys are like legends, right?
Yeah.
These are the super fans that everyone knows.
Sure. Sure. And that's one sad aspect that this movie feels dated a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there's no way two guys like this could ever have seats of any kind at an NBA Finals game today.
Right?
You know?
There's no way.
No.
I mean, imagine what Mike has done to his wife and kid by buying these seats.
I know. Yeah.
They can't even pay for groceries.
And because even in 1996, those seats that these guys have would be thousands of dollars.
Well, Daryl Hannah buys a ticket and he says he spent $300 for a scalper.
Hammond.
Oh, Daryl. That's what I meant. Did I say Daryl Hannah?
Yes, it's
Daryl Hammond. Very different people, right, by the way. Yeah, he shows up with a ticket that he spent $300 on. So, like, yeah.
Right.
These guys go to every game.
Yeah.
What are they dropping, $150 each?
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what season tickets cost for the Celtics, even back then.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, and it's weird because, like, today, anyone who works a regular job has been priced out of it completely. And,
yeah.
And when you watch a game today and the people close to the court are just, like, you know, real estate magnates and Instagram people.
They're there to be seen.
They are.
Not to watch the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's especially gross when you watch a Golden State Warriors game. It's all, like, the Silicon Valley shitheads.
Yeah.
It's nauseating.
They don't know anything about sports ball at all.
No, they do not. No, they are sports ball foolish.
What a bunch of assholes.
Yes.
I gotta pay for, like, the cheap seats, the nosebleeds.
I know.
Come on,
exactly,
man.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway. But you get some good trash talk here from Daniel Stern.
Man.
And he's like, apparently, this is like a ritual. He thinks up new trash to talk every night.
And when he yelled, "I saw Manute Bol banging your mom," I was like, "What the fuck?
Holy shit! You guys suck so bad that Nike should take your shoes away." It's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
And then he says some Mormon stuff.
He gets into the Utah thing. And,
yep.
And you know, I was waiting for him to say something about, like, you know, there is no jazz in Utah. And why the hell are you called that? You know? And
yeah, that would have been a good one. So they, you get to kind of learn the differences between the characters here, too, because Jimmy's, like, excited that they're going to trash talk. But he sits down and, like, kind of hides away as Mike is up screaming.
I know. Yeah.
And then he just kind of seconds every couple words he says.
Yes.
It's like, Manute Bol. Your mom!
Yeah, that's just
like... Yeah, these guys are kind of pathetic, actually, when you think about it.
Very much so.
They,
you know...
This is all they do.
Right, because, I mean, like, every cent they make goes toward this obsession, and this is only just during the basketball season. I mean, when we saw, Jimmy, he was in the midst of watching the Bruins, so, I mean, like, it's... And I think, like... Carol even said something about it. Like, you know, he's like, well, listen, honey, you know, the basketball season's over in a couple of days. She's like, well,
right.
Yeah, I know, but then it's going to be the Red Sox.
And then later, when they're she's talking to their son. He's like, well, now I'm only going to see Dad on Sundays?
Yeah.
And she goes, well, Tommy, football season's starting.
Exactly.
So I don't think you'll see him at all.
I mean, we're in June, so give it another 3 months and football season's coming, so... Yeah.
It's all year, right?
Exactly.
This guy's all year round.
There's something going on.
And if there's not something, like, they'll watch professional wood chopping like they do in this movie.
Yes,
like,
that's right.
That's awesome to watch. I remember watching that on, like, ESPN3.
Yeah. or like, when I first discovered ESPN, I'm this old. Like, they used to have that on the regular ESPN.
Yeah.
And, like, because they had to fill 24 hours, and it was stuff like this. It was you know, like, wood cutting darts and you know... racquetball and all this other crap.
Yeah. And, like, it also goes into their superstition. Like, mm-hmm. I said, like, when I said it's an even game, they swap seats because they're sitting in each other's lucky seat.
Oh,
like,
man, yes.
This whole section is, and especially these guys, they're so superstitious. And that's a huge part of fandom.
Do you People have superstitions?
No.
You don't?
I don't. I used to always get out, I have a giant beer glass, like it's a boot, one of the Das Boot things or whatever,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I would always get that out during, like, playoff games and fill it with three beers and drink it.
Okay.
But It wasn't like I had to do it. It was just right. kind of a tradition.
You didn't pin the Blues' hopes
no,
on
I wasn't
or not
like, oh man, I didn't fill up the glass enough. Like, now we're going to lose. Right, it wasn't right. bullshit like that.
Got it.
It was a tradition, not yeah. a superstition.
That is perfectly cool.
But no, I never had a superstition.
Okay, yeah, I really didn't either. And I was always surprised at like other fans who did, because like even when I was a little kid, a little Christian, I understood that superstition was kind of, you know, what are you guys doing? You
right,
know?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you think that, like, you holding your...
not washing your socks.
Exactly, yeah.
Or, yeah.
Right. Right. Or your dog had to be on, like, that one part of the couch, and if she moved, it would, like, mess up the mojo of you know, it, yeah.
Right.
Stop it.
So, like, yeah, this... you really see, like, the ridiculous of fandom for yeah. these guys.
Right.
And the game starts, and they're doing great, right? It's in the first half.
Yeah.
The Celtics are winning, everyone's happy. But then halftime comes, and Daryl Hammond shows up,
yeah,
Chris
you.
McCarthy, and Daniel Stern is not happy because last time he showed up at a game, they lost,
uh-huh.
so they're mad, or he's
right.
mad.
Right.
I guess it was the Bill Buckner game.
Yeah.
That's what they mentioned.
He was at game six in 1986, and like I guess Buckner's error was due to this dude.
Or they blamed him for it, at least.
And that's the weird thing, yeah. is that, like, so they traveled to New York. They did
exactly.
Just,
I mean, like, what? Well, they it's not that far
it's not
from
that,
Boston.
No, it's but, not. They could just take the Amtrak or something. Yeah. No big deal. But, I mean, like, they were at Game 6, and they, like, missed work and everything.
They must have.
Yeah.
These guys would totally do
totally.
That.
Yeah, probably so.
But, yeah. So, like, now there's, like, this tension, like, oh, no, now we're going to lose because this guy's here.
Right.
And then it starts to come true, right? Lewis Scott gets on fire
yeah.
and starts kicking Boston's ass.
Right.
And during this, there's a montage of the superstition. They're like, well, maybe we should switch seats because of this. And it really goes into that, like, stupid, faulty fan logic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, because I'm not wearing this shirt correctly, we're losing. Well, what about every other time you wore that shirt and they won? You're
yeah.
just discounting that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's such bullshit,
I
right?
I know.
But they start getting everyone else to switch seats, and there's a great shot. I love the joke. Like, it shows Daniel Stern standing in the section, and no one's in the seats. He's just there alone, empty. He's like, it's not working. It's a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone back to their seats. And, like, everyone runs back and fills the seats.
That was a cool moment.
It's so ridiculous.
I know.
It's a great joke. But ultimately, they lose.
Yeah.
And they kick out Daryl Hammond at one point.
Right.
Like, you got to leave. Yeah. It's like, are you fucking kidding me, dude?
I know. God.
Really?
Yeah. think about the psychology of, like, sports talk radio, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we've all done it. We've all, like, listened. I've never called in. Thousands do.
Yeah.
Every day. Still, even with the advent of podcasts,
yeah.
Sports talk radio continues to flourish because guys like Jimmy and Mike they got something to say, you
yeah.
know?
People are driving home just dying to get on that radio.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so they lost the game, right?
Right.
And can you imagine how terrible these guys feel?
I mean, they
could have had a championship that night.
They could have had a championship.
Exactly. They could have done this.
That is how they feel.
Yeah.
And again, more of the Boston stuff. Just the absolute gall that like if they felt this way because they've never experienced this glory.
Right. Yeah.
I could almost understand it.
Yeah.
It would still be really immature and stupid, but at least I could say, okay, they deserve, you know, some credit for their loyalty.
Yeah.
But no, these guys were adults in the 1980s and they watched the Celtics win three titles. So for them to sit there
yep.
and act like all is lost just because, and the series isn't even over. They've got
right,
a game
yeah.
seven at home.
Right.
They got a real good chance here.
Exactly.
You know?
And there's nothing better than a game seven victory at home.
And when you're shooting hoops by yourself and you, like, you do some awesome shot.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in your head, yeah, you hit a shot at the buzzer to
yep.
win game seven.
You get all Sandlot on
of
yourself.
Course, exactly.
Yep.
Yes.
But yeah, so they're sitting there and they get a phone call from these twins who are working at some nightclub. I think they have seats because later they see them down
yeah,
by the court or something.
Yeah, those guys
probably left the game, went to work, And Daniel Stern and Dan Aykroyd are still wallowing in their seats.
I know, right.
They're the only ones in the stadium.
The whole place is cleared out except them.
But they call him and they're like, hey, guess who's here dancing? He's rubbing it in our face. Lewis Scott is here.
Yeah. Yeah, the twins tell them Lewis is on the dance floor rubbing it in our faces.
Yeah.
And he is, I guess, like, he's on his off time.
Yeah.
So that's what professional athletes like to do. They like to go to clubs, and they like to dance with ladies. I mean, that's what happens. Yeah. And I have to say, Damon Wayans looks like $1 million in this movie.
Doesn't he?
Wow.
Oh, dude.
He's so handsome, and he looks like a pro athlete. I mean, he's great in the role.
He does. He's charming.
Yeah.
Like, everything about him, except when he's being an asshole, right? Like,
yeah.
But he's still got that charisma.
He does. He's delivering the asshole lines. I mean, like, he's doing it very calmly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when they eventually get him into Aykroyd's place. And he just, like, he never... His voice never gets above a certain register. He's just always like just delivering these burns, you know, in the most even mannered voice.
He's the coolest guy, man.
He is, right?
He is. He says to him, like, he basically tells him, like, girls love me and guys want to be me. That's what he's basically telling everybody throughout the movie.
And that's again, that whole thing of, like, the screenwriter's idea of just, like, you know, like, hanging a lampshade on it for you. Hey, this guy, he's trash.
It was Judd Apatow who wrote this. And Colin Quinn.
Yeah.
They wrote it together.
I know.
I feel like it could have used another pass or two.
Yes.
To tighten some things up.
I agree.
Yeah.
Right. Now, it's got some great jokes in it, like we've been talking about. And, you know.
They barely have an arc in this movie.
Yes.
It's not developed well enough.
It's definitely not. But there is some change to the character, to all three of the principal characters, really. But yeah, like, Lewis is definitely, I can see Judd Apatow and Colin Quinn, like, furiously scribbling, oh, man, I'm really going to give it to these athletes, you know? And, yeah, putting these words into the mouth of Damon Wayans, you know?
Oh, my God. So they're at the club, right? And they're like, all right, let's go get him wasted so he can't play,
mm-hmm.
you know? If anyone can do it, we can do it.
Yes.
So... not only are these guys obsessed with sports, they're complete alcoholics.
I know, exactly.
Sadly, a lot of times goes hand in hand.
It really does. Because, I mean, if you listened, like, I used to listen to, in addition to The Jungle with Jim Rome, that was what I listened to in the daytime.
Uh-huh.
When I get off work at, like, 10 p.m., I'd listen to JT the Brick at night. Now, that was the late night version. These drunk assholes who are already full of shit, but now they're up at 1 a.m. and they want to talk football.
Oh, man.
You know? Yeah.
And you were there for it.
And there I was, just sitting there, you know?
Sitting there like Jimmy.
Exactly.
Jimmy Flaherty.
Right.
Listening to this.
Wondering what turn my life is taking,
right.
You know?
So they go to get him drunk, right? And what they decide to do is tell him that they're his biggest fan. Because that's what these assholes like to hear. Which, they're not wrong. So they go up, tell them they love them, basically, and they meet Larry Bird at the same time. And then Lewis Scott is like, hey, Larry, these guys hate the Celtics. And, you know, this is the ultimate disgrace to both of them. We know.
Yeah.
Because they're obsessed with the Celtics and Boston in general. And you can't get more Celtic than Larry Bird.
It's true. And I think Daniel Stern is really good in this scene.
Yeah.
Because he sits there, like, he says a bunch of insulting things about the Celtics, and he keeps, like doing kind of a stage whisper to Dan Aykroyd. Oh, my God. What am I doing?
I'm going to be sick.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Right. And I love also Damon Wayans in this moment, Lewis Scott, because I think he introduces them. He says, hey, Larry, these two white Irish guys from Boston can't stand you.
It's an endangered species in this town.
Right.
Two white Irish guys from Boston who hate the Celtics.
Oh, it's
great.
And
Larry says, fans like you make me sick.
Uh-huh.
You love us when we're winning. You hate us when we're losing. Lewis, you could keep these guys. But we don't want them.
Yeah.
And, you know... These guys, that's the worst thing they could hear, right?
Right.
Larry Bird telling them they suck.
Yes. because they're never going to get this opportunity again.
Right, exactly.
You know, they will never meet Larry Bird again.
And I love when Daniel Stern introduces himself. He's like, I'm Larry Bird. Yeah. Because he's so starstruck, you know?
Exactly, yes.
But you said Daniel Stern is great in this scene. Like, I think all the actors are really good.
Oh, I do.
They're all
too.
Pretty good. And Daniel Stern, he's got a lot of famous roles, right?
Yeah.
But I think he's underrated. Like, I think he's actually got some really good acting chops.
I agree with you. Like, everything, I've seen him mainly in comedy.
Mainly, you know? Yeah, right.
And every time I've been impressed, he always makes you laugh. And
yeah, even in shit like Chud.
I know.
He's, like, really good.
Right.
And he's a dad in, like, Little Monsters or something. He plays, like, Fred Savage's dad.
Yeah.
He's really good in that role, too.
And I love him. I mean, I watched a lot of The Wonder Years.
Yeah.
Where we didn't see him, but he's obviously ever present. I mean, like, you hear his voice throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned Chud. I think we need to talk about Chud for just a moment because it's like, I don't think Daniel Stern at any point in his life has ever been as filthy as he was in Chud.
Oh my God, dude. Like I watched Chud a couple months ago and he was like the dirtiest person in the entire universe.
I don't know what was, I mean, like, I know he was like serving soup to the homeless or whatever, but like, he himself, like
the Chuds were cleaner than him.
Exactly, dude. He was just pitting through the whole fucking thing, you know?
I don't know what was happening.
Man.
We got to talk Chud one of these days.
We will,
dude.
Yes.
We'll get there.
Well, and as far as like highlighting the acting in the movie, like, I'll tell you who's a bad actor. Larry Bird.
He's horrible.
I mean, holy shit.
Yeah.
And it's always so amazing to me that like these guys, they make cameos in movies and they're playing themselves and they're still bad actors.
They can't even play themselves.
It's just amazing to me.
Like we've done several Hulk Hogan movies.
Yes. I will say though, like Hulk Hogan is a better actor than Larry Bird.
Yeah.
From what I've seen.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I watched Night Boat or whatever that show on TNT was.
And you could consider his wrestling career as acting, right?
Yeah.
He's performing.
Yeah.
Like, dude, he knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
He's not going to win any awards.
No.
But he can perform.
In his carny role as a wrestler, yes, he can. He's a good performer. And when he's in, like, when he plays a character in a movie, I mean, he's more believable than what we just saw from Larry Bird playing himself.
Right, exactly.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. So because of this, they've kind of proven to Lewis Scott that they're true fans of Lewis Scott.
Yeah.
So they spend the rest of the night hanging out and getting wasted.
Yeah.
They say, we're going to buy you a drink. And Lewis Scott's like, no, I'm going to buy you guys a drink.
Yep.
So they've got the ticket in. And then you get a montage of them just getting completely wasted.
Yep.
Which I find extremely fun.
I
love it.
Right.
They start like inventing drinks and shit.
Yep.
And they stumble out of the bar. Lewis Scott passes out in their arms at like 4 a.m. And at this point, Daniel Stern even says, hey, I know an after-hours place we can go. I'm like, dude, these guys are going to kill him.
I know, because he's completely wrecked and dead on his feet.
Yep.
And they just like, and we don't see them go to the next spot, but we see them like a little bit, you know, like obviously.
Yeah, we see them like kind of walking down the street, like holding Lewis Scott on their shoulders and like dragging him basically.
Right. And then the morning comes and we're at Jimmy's house.
Oh man, his house. What do you think of his house?
Oh dude, Jimmy's house it's supposed to be the home of a sad single man, but it looks pretty inviting to me.
It looks awesome.
I know.
It is the home of a sad single man.
It is that, yes.
right. This future serial killer incel. Which is what Jimmy Flaherty is pretty close to.
Yeah, he kind of is that guy.
Yes,
exactly. There was this great big whiff of like 90s culture when we first got in there, especially that big stupid entertainment center that weighs 1,000 pounds.
Right.
You know, I can't believe what a burden our furniture and appliances were back then.
Right.
You know, just ruining carpets and like, and you know, obviously injuring our backs at every turn.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, terrible.
Yep, it's awful. But they both wake up in Jimmy's apartment, and it turns out Lewis is in the bed also.
Yeah.
And he's duct taped.
His hands are duct taped together. And like, I guess at some point they tied him up.
They all blacked out.
Yeah.
And ended up there, and they decided to tie him up.
Right.
They wake up and they realize what they've done, and they're like, we've got to get rid of this guy.
Right.
But first, they've got to take some pictures of him wearing Celtics gear, which they do.
Yep.
And if they didn't do that, they could have gotten out of this whole situation, yes. Honestly.
Everything would have been fine.
Because right at the very tail end, when they're finally letting him go, he comes to and realizes what has happened.
If they hadn't wasted, you know, however long, I mean, they could have just, like, taken him down the stairs.
Because these guys are
fine.
The super fans. Yeah. We've got to take these pictures. We got to show everybody down at the bar, you know? Mm-hmm. We got to show Kevin. We got to show everyone.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Paul Guilfoyle is Kevin.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah. The police officer friend.
Right. Yes.
Yes. So he wakes up and he realizes who they he remembers their names, and they try to he like trips them. He like almost gets away while he's tied up.
Yeah, because like he's yeah, his
because these guys suck so bad.
And he's a pro athlete, yes. And he actually has some like self-defense skills. At one point, like Daniel Stern like tries to turn around, and like Lewis just like he like sweeps the leg.
Yeah.
And you know,
he's
nope,
tied
no
up. His legs are tied up, too.
Right.
So he moves them both just in one direction and totally flattens Daniel Stern.
He bests him at every turn. And, like, eventually they get the upper hand because, like Jimmy has this very strange gun.
Yeah. He mentions it's, like, some championship, like, shooter's gun from the Olympics or something.
Yeah, some, like, skeet shooting. Whatever. Yeah, or like, Olympic biathlon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of shit he has.
Yeah.
He has every little sports memorabilia that's some important event.
Yeah.
And Kevin even mentions that to him earlier. Because Dan Aykroyd is like spouting off all these stats. Like, yeah, he pinned you in like 1987 at the World Junior Champions in 8.2 seconds.
Yeah.
And he's like, how the fuck? Like, where do you store all this memory and shit?
I know.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. And I can relate to it because, you know, obviously.
Yeah, right.
And whenever, I mean, you can relate to it too because you have an encyclopedic knowledge.
I have a pretty good one.
Yes.
I think you're better.
Right.
I've got an abridged version,
you. Yes. But like,
so, yes.
But I'm sure people ask you all the time, where you get it? Like, where are you storing all this?
How do you know that? Like,
And I always kind of like, you know, I'm always like, well, I can't believe that others don't, you know? why don't you have all this knowledge?
But yeah, it is funny. He keeps all this stuff. He knows all this history, which I think that's what I love about it. Kind of, it's like that's historical, man. That's awesome.
That's right. And it's not useless.
Right.
It's obviously special to someone.
He should open a museum.
Yeah,
that's what he should do.
Yeah, I mean, as much memorabilia as he's got, you're right. He could actually charge admission to have people look at this stuff.
Yeah. You know? But at this point, they've got to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
Because they've kidnapped, you know, the star player, the best player in the NBA.
Yeah.
Right before the Game 7 of the championship.
Right.
So this is a big thing. All they wanted to do was get him drunk, and then this happened.
And which was also a dumb move. Like the whole plan was stupid.
It is, right?
Like,
why would you interfere? They talk about interference here.
Yeah, they do.
Lewis Scott says, even if you guys win, you're going to be an asterisk in the record book. And Jimmy says, I would love to be an asterisk or something along those lines.
He does say that, yes, which is a really dumb statement to make because, like, if he thought about it for more than 5 seconds, he'd realize that, like, when you have an asterisk accomplishment, it's not fun. And you always are, like, you're always defending it. You always are, like, you know, there's always people, like, telling you didn't deserve it.
Right.
So, yeah, you don't want to be an asterisk.
And it goes into their psychology of how obsessed these guys, like, they think they are on the team, basically.
I know.
Like, what they're doing is for the team. They're doing it for the good of the team. Because we're with them.
Yeah.
Guys, you don't have to do this.
No, you don't. And
it's not going to make a difference.
And I've been using we in terms of sports, you know, like my whole life.
Me too. I still do.
Yeah, I do too. Whenever I mean, not anymore because I don't have like the, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Obviously we are not on the team.
Exactly.
You know, but we talk about it like we are, and like what happens out there affects us somehow.
And it's accepted, right? As if people say we, it's generally accepted because it's part of a city. Sports teams, one aspect of them is to build kind of a community and a pride for where you live.
Absolutely. That's what it's meant for. It's supposed to be a public good.
It should be.
Yes.
It's a commodity, though.
Exactly. Right. There's the problem. and the owner of the Utah Jazz and the owner of the Boston Celtics and the men who own these teams who threaten to leave if you don't build them a shiny new stadium.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I can't abide it. You know?
Yep. So in this scene, Lewis Scott kind of psychoanalyzes Jimmy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Daniel Stern is like, hey, we need to get breakfast. Yeah. And Dan Aykroyd starts like listing off all these meals he can make.
I know.
Like, are you serious? Like, this is kind of one of those little jokes I think this is just badly written in. Okay. Like, it doesn't really fit.
Yeah.
Like, I guess they're trying to develop some kind of characterization with him a little more.
Yeah.
But it's like, all of a sudden he flips from, oh my God, we're in this terrifying situation. What are we going to do? To, oh man, I wonder if I should make pancakes. Like, like it becomes more of just like a casual environment that he's in.
Yes. And we're made to feel that like, Jimmy is a little bit fey, you know, in that he wants to like make pancakes and though that's not something a man does, everybody, you know,
right. Not this sports guy.
Exactly. And they go really far in order to do this, you know?
Yeah.
And until this moment, Jimmy was not Mike's lapdog.
Right.
You know,
he was even calling some shots.
Yes.
You could see he was a little timid when they were trash talking.
Right.
But I don't think that leads into something like this.
Exactly. That was just a humorous affectation.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was pretty good. We both thought it was a pretty good joke.
Yeah.
This, on the other hand, yeah, it's just something that they can use to like build what Lewis does to Jimmy after Mike leaves.
Right. Because he points out, hey, he's making you his bitch.
Yeah.
And Jimmy's like, no, he's not. And then he realizes, oh, I am.
Right.
And Lewis Scott uses this and kind of brainwashes him.
Yes.
And are you going to let him talk to you like that?
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's like totally taken over by Lewis Scott.
And he realizes he needs to assert himself.
Right. You know?
Because the last thing you could ever want to be is a servile man. You know,
you can't have that.
No, absolutely not. A man who does things
the
for
Boston
people?
Fans won't allow it.
No, certainly not.
Yeah, and this, I feel like they make jokes like this a few more times throughout the movie, kind of. And I don't know, they're just not that good, I don't think.
Well, and I to be honest with you, like as funny as some of the lines that Damon Wayans has when he's the prisoner in the house.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's kind of the weakest part of the movie is this area where it's almost like a saggy middle, you know.
Yeah,
I think it goes on for
when
a
they've
little
got
too
him
long.
Hostage.
Yeah,
yeah. Because there's like, all right, we've got this scene where we find him, and then we got this scene where Carol comes over. Then we got this scene with the landlord,
right?
Which is the same scene that just happened.
I know. And the whole thing with the landlord thing. and I do like the one where Carol and the kid come over.
That one's good
because it took a lot less time for Carol to find out what was going on than I was thinking it was going to like be a whole bunch of hijinks before she caught on. But
it's pretty good because they hide in the kitchen while Daniel Stern's talking to Carol.
Right.
And Daniel Stern's really good because he's kind of like trying to rush it to get rid of them,
you know,
and you can tell like his anxiety and stuff.
Uh-huh, right.
And he's just trying to say what she wants him to say to placate her, to get her to leave.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we'll go back to your therapist. You know, we'll do all this. He says, we'll go back to the therapist. I won't even try to hit him this time. Which, that's a good line.
Because it's Daniel Stern.
That's a good line.
He's
Daniel
great.
Stern is great with that.
Yeah.
And then you hear something in the kitchen move, and she's right away, she's like, dude, I can't believe you got a woman in there.
Exactly. Yep.
Which is the obvious conclusion.
I mean, and he reacts because she goes over to like to where the tarp is that they're covering the kitchen with, expecting
like
to find a lady.
It's like a shower curtain
yes.
that divides his kitchen from the living room.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a childish man apartment.
I know. I know. Exactly. Like, yeah, I shouldn't have said it looked inviting because, well, listen,
well, it does.
Yes.
But,
but you know, right.
It could be a little more livable.
Yes. It could be more hospitable, more mature. You know,
maybe you don't need a curtain to divide the room at all.
That's true. You're right. It could just be the kitchen.
You know he's getting up 10 times a game to go grab another brewski.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Well, he's probably got a couch with the fridge built in, and so he's got it all figured out, I'm sure.
You know, and that's a great setup.
Yeah.
You know, and
I'm down. I'm not knocking
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, yes.
I'm knocking the shower curtain divide.
Yes. You should not have that in the middle of your house.
Yes. And she opens the curtain, right. And Jimmy's holding the gun on Lewis Scott.
Right.
And he's got duct tape over his mouth. And she's like, "Who is that?" And Daniel Stern gets mad, like, "This is the problem with our relationship. Yes, I kidnapped Lewis Scott, exactly. And you don't even know who it is." Wrong play, dude.
Yes, exactly. That's not the time for you to question her NBA knowledge.
And I love this joke when she says, "Who is Lewis Scott?"
Uh-huh.
Both Mike and Jimmy are like, "Who is Lewis Scott?" And then you hear Damon Wayans go, with the duct tape on his mouth, which is so funny because that feeds right into his vanity. Like, he's even like, "Are you fucking kidding me? Exactly. I'm Lewis Scott."
Yes, yes. The last thing, like the best, one of the most well-known professional athletes wants to see is someone who doesn't know who they
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they get into that in this like kidnapping saggy middle scene too, because they're watching Big Jim Fulton chop the logs.
Yes.
And Daniel Stern says, "Why do you do these commercials?" And he says, "For the money, right?"
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "Bullshit, you've got tons of money. I think you just want us to see your face every 5 minutes because we're going to love you."
Mm.
And I think it's a great observation too.
Because, I think it's pretty good, yeah.
Like, the money's great, but yeah, there's something about this guy.
Right.
And you can tell through Damon Wayne's performance, there is something about this guy. He's insecure about something.
Uh-huh.
He wants everyone to love him. So I think he's right when he calls him out on this.
Yes, it reminded me of, I watched the 30 for 30 about like the Orlando Magic in the mid-90s. And it's when they drafted Penny Hardaway and Shaquille O'Neal. And like,
oh, baby.
And it was like, okay, here we go. You know, this is now the place to. And unfortunately, like, because Penny was so good and he was like first team all NBA, like, Shaq got jealous. The reason he went to the Lakers wasn't just because he wanted to be a movie star. It was because he wanted to be number one. He wanted to be the guy. And as long as he was teammates with Penny Hardaway, like, everyone's always going to say, oh, they got two great players. And like, and it's so cool to watch him now talk about, like, on camera, how what a young idiot he was.
Exactly.
And he was just like, I can't believe that stuff was important to me. But I admit it was. The weird thing is they drafted Kobe Bryant right when he went.
Exactly.
So now he had to contend with that, who was actually like way more selfish and like, you know, like wanted to be a star way more than Penny did.
Penny Hardaway, dude. I haven't thought about that guy in a long
time.
Oh,
dude, 90s NBA.
They dropped Grant Hill's name in this movie,
I know,
too.
Right? Yes. He says something about, like, we had Grant Hill instead of Lewis Scott, you know?
Christopher McDonald's like, Grant Hill wouldn't have skipped practice. He would have went to church and then showed up early.
Yes, exactly.
Every time I think of Grant Hill, I think of Sprite.
Yes.
Talking about commercials, right?
Yes. Oh, my gosh, man. Yeah, it's all coming back to me.
So they make a bet that Lewis Scott can leave if they don't find his commercial playing while skipping through channels.
Yeah.
And they end up finding the commercial of him playing he's playing one-on-one against an Oscar Mayer wiener.
Yes.
Which is excellent.
It's a funny commercial.
Yeah. It's an animated hot dog and he's playing basketball with it.
Right.
It's really good.
And it looks and feels like a 1996 commercial with an NBA player.
It perfectly lampoons it.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what it is. Like, the same thing with the Charles Barkley commercial they spiked. Like, it's the same thing.
Yep. Yep, very good satire.
I'll play one-on-one with this hot dog any day.
Yes.
They're mocking him and everything.
Uh-huh.
And these scenes try to develop some kind of friendship type thing between all three of these characters.
Yeah.
Like, especially between Lewis and Mike, Daniel Stern's character. Like, there's something here where I guess they're finding out each other's secrets almost.
Right.
Like, they're calling each other out.
Right.
Because Lewis Scott even knows the score with Mike. He's like, "You're some washed up high school player, never made it and shit."
He clocks it really fast.
They know and he's pinned the, you know, insecurity on Lewis Scott. Like, so they've kind of drawn each other out.
Uh-huh.
And they're building some, like, you know, when you joke around with your friends, like, that's kind of what this scene is with the hot dog commercial.
Oh,
they're kind of ribbing him a little bit.
Right.
And he's like, "Shut the fuck, you don't know what you're talking about. Shut up.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so they're trying to build something here. I don't think it does the best job with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to develop more later. And that's one of the things I think that the script could have used more work on, is making this, like, the arch, like you said, like the character arc. Like, they need to work on it a little more.
Yeah.
To make it a little better.
Yeah. And the interplay, like, when you have, I guess, something happening like this where it's all taking place in kind of a in one room for a good portion of the movie.
Yeah.
Like that, that's hard to keep people's interest, you know?
Yeah.
It has to be a pretty compelling story. Like if it had been more of the scene with Carol discovering Lewis, being held hostage,
yeah,
and the scene where they're watching, where they're flipping through channels and looking for a Lewis commercial.
Yeah.
Those are the best.
Yeah. Those are excellent.
Yeah.
I just thought of another Daniel Stern performance. That's okay. Really, it's City Slickers.
Oh my gosh.
He's amazing in that movie.
Yes, he is.
By the way.
Yes. He's briefly in Hannah and Her Sisters.
Really?
He plays a rock star who is like, he buys a house in Southampton.
Uh-huh.
And Michael Caine sets him up, like introduces him to Max von Sydow to like buy some art for his new Hamptons mansion. And
man,
Max von Sydow is not having any of it.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Daniel Stern.
Yes.
Dude, I'm going to have to do a filmography deep dive on this guy and just go through it.
Yeah.
Because anything, I'm sure he's amazing in.
Yes. There is one performance I don't care for.
Okay.
It's in Rookie of the Year. That's a movie he directed.
Right.
He plays a very cartoonish, like, hitting coach
for the
Cubs.
You're completely right.
Yeah.
He's horrible in that.
It's a big, broad
character. He's trying
character.
To
yeah.
make it, like, a slapstick child, like, a Jar Jar Binks. Like, it was before Jar Jar Binks.
It
but,
predates
like,
Jar Jar.
It's one of those, like, this is for the little kids type performance.
Right.
So he's doing that, but yeah, it's not fun. Actually, there's a really good joke in that movie. He, he goes to, with, what's his name? Rowan Gardner, the kid or whatever.
Yeah.
They're at the bar and he's like, this is the best part about being a pro athlete. And they walk up to these two ladies and he's like, excuse me, ladies. And they look at him and he goes, excuse me. And they like move out of the way and then they start playing pinball.
Okay, good.
That's a good joke.
Excellent, man.
Anyway, back to the basketball movie.
Right. Well, speaking of tabletop games,
you
know, like, along with Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, this is the second time we've seen electric football played by movie characters.
Yes, that's true.
For those who don't know, this was a scale model NFL field and stadium with these 2-inch plastic players that you'd line up against each other.
Yeah.
The idea was you'd turn it on and, like, realistic gameplay would result. It's one of the most popular and infamous toys ever produced in America. And it's got this cult around it because everyone had such high hopes for it, but it never worked.
Did you ever get it to work?
No.
I never did.
No. My brother and I inherited my uncle's set that he was given in the 70s. And I spent so long trying to get it to do anything resembling football.
Yeah.
And I thought I was the problem, that I was messing this up.
Me too.
You know?
I was at Nana's house.
Yes.
And I was playing with Uncle Danny's football game.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, luckily when the internet happened, like, we found out, no, it's not my fault. This toy is just beautiful garbage, you know?
The internet saved you.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Wow, Dave. I can't believe you brought that up. That's
Thank
amazing.
You. Yes.
We need to keep track of every movie we see with that.
We
now,
definitely
from now
do.
On.
Exactly. Start a whole new podcast.
Yeah, dude.
You know?
Holy crap. Anyway, the landlord comes over in another scene.
Yes.
And Lewis Scott gets away.
Right. Right. Yeah, he kind of just like ducks into the bathroom and like gets out of the duct
tape pretty
easily.
He says, hey, I gotta pee. And they're like, yeah, right. And he's like, are you kidding me? I've been here for like a day and haven't peed. I have to go.
Yeah.
So they let him go in there by himself. And then he escapes.
Yeah. These guys are pretty brainless.
Yeah. They're dumbasses.
And they had... Yes, they are. And at one point, like, before the escape happened, they had, like, Mike went out to get something, and he ran into Kevin, Paul Guilfoyle's character.
Yeah. He's a police officer.
He's a police officer who was a former wrestler who apparently got pinned, you know, in less than 8 seconds. And he, like, says something about, you know... like, what would happen if, like, somebody kidnapped, you know, Lewis Scott or whatever? And, like, as a fan of the Celtics, you know, Kevin starts encouraging him to do it.
Yeah.
You know? But then he says, well, listen, I'm actually an officer of the law, and I could never tell you to commit this crime. This
right.
is terrible, you know?
Right. We're just joking, right?
Exactly. We're just... I don't have anything to worry about, do I? but, you know, yeah. Just put that in
your
back pocket.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
So, he escapes... They chase him. I guess it's nighttime now.
Right.
The night before the big game. And they get in, like, Jimmy's plumbing van and chase him down. And Jimmy's running through the street with his Olympic pistol.
Like, yes, that starter's pistol. I know, right?
At one point, Lewis gets in a cab. And he's like, go, go, go.
Uh-huh.
And the guy goes, hey, you're Lewis Scott. Get out of my cab. And he rolls up the window and there's a Celtics sticker.
Yep.
Pretty good. But, dude, no, you're in Boston and you just beat him in game six. Of course he's going to kick you out of his cab.
I don't believe that.
Okay.
I don't believe that for one second. I think that any cab driver who kicked a first-team All-NBA player out of their cab because he, like, dunked on the Celtics?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You know what kind of tip you're missing out on?
Absolutely.
Especially if you're helping him escape two kidnappers?
We've already seen that he's a pretty generous tipper, you know?
That's true. Michael Jordan gave Jimmy and Tommy a $100 bill.
Exactly. Michael Jordan was famously not a good tipper, apparently.
What an asshole.
Yes. Him and Tiger Woods, they were really cheap.
Grant Hill would have showed up. Yes. He would have ordered a salad. Uh-huh. And gave you $200.
I know. That was right. Exactly. He was changing lives every day.
Yes, he was. Yeah, you're right. That was a very Seinfeldian move of that cab driver.
Right, exactly. Yes.
So they ultimately catch up to him. He doesn't get very far, right? And they catch up to him. And there's a police officer there in the distance. And he calls out to him, "Hey, officer, help me." And it's Kevin.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, ho, buddy." And he just ignores the whole situation.
Right.
He sees Mike and Jimmy, and he knows what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
And this obviously leads to, like, at first I was like, why is he ignoring this? And then I realized, oh, well, he's in Boston, you know, and he realizes the stakes. And then he thinks, then he's kind of a scumbag, and he likes to gamble.
Right.
It's a sure thing. If these guys can just keep Lewis under wraps for like 24 more hours, obviously the Celtics are going to take the prize.
He calls somebody and right after the scene is like, "Hey, I got a sure thing."
It's probably Whitey Bulger.
Let's make some money. It probably is. Was he still around in 96?
You know what? I don't know. Actually, maybe he was already on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted.
Probably,
at that point.
Yeah. But anyways, it turns out he's making like 10,000 t-shirts to sell. That we won. So that's what he's getting out of this.
Right, right.
Not only a victory, he's getting some serious dough.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
and like this part where from when Lewis escapes to when they go to the gas station and like the Zippo doesn't work. I know the movie's only 90 minutes long. Once Lewis escapes, once they track him down, I wish they would have gone right to
the basketball
or the court where like Lewis kind of, you know, like wrestles them down.
The ego off?
Yes, the ego off. Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, they catch up to him and now they're driving around instead of being in the apartment because the landlord saw him leave. So they probably he probably called the cops or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
But actually, he probably didn't because he just left the apartment casually. Like, just like, "Hey, guys, thanks for the good time. I'll
see
you later."
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's what he says when he leaves.
Yeah, that's true.
He actually says, "But I really got to go."
Yeah.
Because my brother and I say that.
Wait, the line you quote is, "I really got to go?
But I got to really got to go."
I got you. Okay.
"But I got to really got to go."
Okay, okay.
Because of the rhythm to it. It sounds cool, you know?
Now it makes sense.
That's not the only thing we quote from the movie, but we quote plenty.
Okay, got it.
Anyway, where are we now? They're driving around in a goddamn toilet van.
Right, and they, you know, and this is...
This is where they try to do more of that character development.
Exactly, and they try to do the thing where they're, like, bonding. Because, I mean, like, at one point, they kind of, like... They gang up kind of on Mike, you know, which is kind of sad. Or they gang up on Jimmy, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Dan
which Aykroyd.
Is a little bit sad because, like, it we're led to believe that, like, Jimmy is, like, I guess, virginal.
Yeah, I guess he literally is an incel.
Yes, right. True.
But,
They
see, like, they talk about some model or something. You know, the Guess Jeans girl.
The Guess Jeans girl, yeah.
And Damon Wayans is like, "Oh, you mean Michelle?"
Uh-huh.
And they all get into this conversation about how their dreams are his reality and stuff like that. And Daniel Stern starts saying, like, "Man, I've only been with two women in my life," like opening up his heart a little bit to the guy he's kidnapped.
Yes.
And like,
I know.
And then he kind of like consoles him a little, like, "Hey, well, you know, at least two more than Jimmy."
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And then they all laugh about it. And like you said, they're bonding here.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really feel super earned. Like, it could have been done way worse. Like, there's, I think you feel a little bit here, but it's not that well done.
How can any part of it, like, feel earned or make any sense
exactly.
if that in the end, I mean, they've imprisoned somebody.
Right.
You know,
and like they literally stopped to get gas right after this.
Yeah.
And they're still kind of laughing and joking. And Daniel Stern's like, hey, don't go anywhere.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
And Lewis Scott says, I'll fucking kill you or some shit like that.
Uh-huh.
Or he says, I hope you die.
Yes.
He's not bonding. He just told him he wants him to die,
right.
You know, like 2 minutes later. Like,
right.
So it's like none of this is earned or matters.
And I really, I don't care for this whole thing of like the gas on the pants and
yeah.
the cigarette lighter. I just like,
yeah.
When are we getting to the damn game? I mean, like,
I liked this joke back in the day a lot more than I do now.
Okay.
So he's trying to escape and he sprays gasoline on Daniel Stern's crotch. And there's an old lighter that doesn't work, and Dan Aykroyd kind of lets him try to light him on fire because he knows it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then they're driving in the van later, and then the lighter works.
Right.
You know, it's a
right.
classic bait and switch gag.
I guess so. Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
But Daniel Stern does have a good facial reaction when he realizes the lighter does work. He has that like kind of dead stare, like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's yeah. good. But yeah, it's a waste of time.
I know. I mean, like, as I said, this is not a long movie, but it still just has some moments where I'm just kind of like, okay, let's get to it, you know?
Right. It feels like they're the same scenes happening
yeah.
over and over, you know?
Yeah.
We need more,
right.
you know? And there's other characters in the movie. You're Christopher McDonald's in your fucking movie.
I know.
Do more with him.
You could have like maybe two
do
more
with the team. Maybe.
Two more cutaways with him like coaching the other players and you know having the like just either talking about Lewis and like speculating where he's at and maybe like getting a search party going like
yeah or they try to call the cops and like Kevin is like oh I haven't seen him you
right,
know
right.
So, do something
I
more.
Mean, I understand, and it's also a comedy, so you're not looking for like tons of realism, but like
yeah.
come on everybody if. Any NBA player went missing during the NBA finals. it's going to be a nationwide manhunt.
The excuse is he skipped practice before, so they're not taking it seriously,
you know,
right?
And the whole, by the way, sports writers and screenwriters, if someone skips practice, that's none of your goddamn business. So come off it. I know that you would be there, you little fucking tryhards, you know, but enough. Enough.
Yeah.
When Allen Iverson made that famous speech about, you know, we're talking about practice, he was correct. He was correct.
Yep.
You know, why are you people interested in this? You know?
Oh, my fucking God, dude. All the name drops. I forgot about all these. Also, by the way, did you notice the assistant coach? It's Scott Lawrence.
Yes, I did.
Go back to our Time Cop episode, everybody.
The guy who knocked us out with his, you know,
the best performance in Time Cop.
He
sold time travel in Time Cop to you.
Completely such an intense actor in an otherwise terrible film.
Exactly. He has nothing to do in this movie.
I know.
I think he has a line where I'll call him again.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah. Christopher McDonald says, give that guy a call, you know?
So he's kind of like Christopher McDonald's Dan Aykroyd.
Boy, you know, like, talk about your raw fucking deals, man.
Oh,
you know, like,
man.
I just honestly. I
exactly.
Mean, man, this guy should be out in front. And yeah, terrible.
Anyway, so now they're driving around again and they start arguing about how Daniel Stern's got it still. You know, he's still got game. You know, he can do anything. I gave it up for my family.
Oh, yeah.
And. You didn't sacrifice anything, Lewis Scott. Well, yeah, I did. I sacrificed everything. So they're arguing with each other.
I know.
And then now they've got to prove who has the bigger dick, right?
Yes.
So they go to some court, like at some park, and start playing basketball against each other.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, it's really terrible. And like this is where like it's kind of artfully cut together. We don't see much of Daniel Stern, like
yeah.
We see him getting schooled a lot and falling down.
Yeah, he's trying to play a little D,
right.
And he just keeps getting knocked over.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have thought that Daniel Stern was better at basketball than this.
He's
that
got
was
the
a
height.
Bit disappointing, yes.
He's almost as tall as Larry Bird in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know. That was really, I know, exactly. He was almost nose to nose with him. But yeah, it was a bit fine.
But that's the characterization,
is,
right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He's a washed up dude who's not. He's living in the past.
But I would have loved to him like seen his shooting form or something. You know,
right, at
just
least
like
pivot a little or something.
Exactly.
You know,
get a couple shots
off. I'm sure he could do that.
You know, right.
He doesn't even get like bricked by like Lewis Scott at all.
No,
he doesn't
exactly.
do anything.
Yeah, exactly. Have it be where like Lewis is rejecting every one of his shots,
yeah.
but he looks still like competent doing it, you know.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's a gym teacher. He grew up his whole life he was playing ball,
yeah,
right?
Presumably he knows what he's doing, right? Exactly. Yes.
But yeah, you are playing against the Michael Jordan of the movie. So,
honestly,
I mean,
like,
still.
The average person, like, I think of, like, if I were to play catch with a Major League Baseball player, right. I couldn't do it. Like, it would be too much.
I like to always say, like, even the worst player in the league is 1,000 times better than you.
It's like, do you know how awesome yeah. you have to be the worst player in the NBA?
You still have to be amazing.
You got
to
be unbelievable. Right.
So Daniel Stern's got nothing.
Exactly right.
Lewis Scott stomps him.
Yeah.
And is like, all right, I'm leaving and I'm going to the game and you guys have to wear purple and cheer for me at game 7. Instead of going to the police. Like you said, you don't need absolute realism here.
No.
It's a comedy film, right? And I don't know where it comes from, but... It is true. This is a worse punishment than prison for these two guys.
That's how they see it. Right.
Yeah. So
yes.
That's what he's making them do.
Right. And like those are the terms too of the arrangement is that like he won't go to the cops if the Jazz win the title.
Right.
And during the game, they have to like wear Jazz gear as punishment and literally cheer for him in their good seats.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
It's a good punishment. It's not realistic, obviously,
right, right.
But
yeah.
but it's like, I like that he's trying to torture them for their ridiculous fandom.
Right.
You know, and because in the end, you know, watching, think of how it was like, think of 2019, if you were in Boston, and you had to like tear off, you know, your Blues stuff. And
oh
sit there
God.
With like a Cam Neely jersey or a Ray Bourque.
And oh, like, my God.
And you were actually cheering for the Bruins. I mean, like,
no.
can you even imagine such a scenario? No, it's makes no sense. No.
I can't do it, Dave.
Yeah, no.
I will go to prison before I do that.
Exactly. It's like, I know.
Especially against the Bruins. They denied us twice before,
I
and I can't take it.
One of the most popular and well-known shots in Sports Illustrated history, yeah, is that.
Don't even tell me.
Yeah.
I don't want to see it. I don't want to visualize it.
No, of course.
I'm good.
It's an iconic photograph that Scott wants nothing to do with, you know?
Exactly. Anyway, so now they go to the game, and they got their purple on, right?
Yep.
They walk in with trench coats, I guess, to hide it.
Yes.
So they can get through security, at least.
Right.
And they sit down, and they take the coats off, and everyone is aghast.
Right. Yes.
What's wrong with you guys?
And it's a natural reaction to have, I suppose.
Right. And Susie the hot dog girl, who we didn't mention before, but she's in love with Jimmy,
right.
smacks him in the face.
Yes. I guess he had that coming.
Yeah, he had it coming.
Right. Maybe not for the Jazz gear, but for all the other stuff he's been doing.
Yeah. For being such a creep.
Yes, exactly right.
So everyone's like questioning them.
Right.
Daniel Stern gives this speech. Isn't it obvious? And then trying to think of something.
And this is great Daniel Stern again.
It is.
Like, he makes a great argument for why they're wearing Jazz stuff.
Fan logic.
Exactly. And he convinces, like, the entire Boston Garden, you know?
It was like I said earlier, you know, you kind of just make it up.
Yeah.
You know, it's all bullshit, you know? He's like, well, who have we been cheering for the whole time?
Right.
The Celtics,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And they lost.
Yes.
So... if we cheer for the Jazz, then they'll lose. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, that makes total sense.
Right, right.
And
there's a bunch of other, like, kind of weird logic that's, like, mixed in with, like, the broad strokes that you just gave. It's like a 40-second speech that he goes on where like, it is bullshit fan logic. But even, like, the fans and us, we both kind of go, you know what? Yeah. Go for it.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
And the Boston Garden... some of what we see when they first arrive at game 6 is footage of the real garden.
Yeah.
But when they're actually at the game, both game 6 and 7, It's just a set that's made up to look like, to resemble the real place.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, it was always a pleasure to watch a Celtics game because the Garden looked great on television. It was always so well lit, mm-hmm. and it just looked so inviting. But I remember hearing about how there were times when the AC was busted, like during May and June playoff games. Can you imagine the stank in that place?
Oh my God. Just like the rotten beer smell.
Oh my gosh. Alone. All the mustard that's just like in the cement, you know?
And all the people.
Oh my God.
Dude,
all the
don't even mention the ass. dude.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, not
and,
fun.
And, you know, these guys aren't as clean as they can be.
No, exactly. And it was the 80s, so there was just, like, a lot of body hair.
That makes it worse. There's yeah. smoke everywhere.
Yes. Yeah.
Jesus. So anyway, they show up, and they start cheering for Lewis Scott. He shows up, and is like, hey, I'm ready to play. And Christopher McDonald is really upset.
Yeah.
So he benches him. For 5 seconds?
Yes, exactly.
It's a pretty funny joke, though, because
yeah.
earlier he's like, I'm not going to bench him. I can't, bench my star player in game 7 of the finals. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Because any coach who would do such a thing would be fired on the spot.
Right.
You know.
So right before the game starts, right before tip-off,
yeah.
he puts him on the bench. 5 seconds later. All right, you've suffered enough. Get out there.
Yes, exactly. Right. And he really makes it like, he really sells it. Like he
yeah.
tells, like he kind of dresses him down in front of the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And like, you know, just like.
Doesn't feel good, does it?
Exactly. Yes. But yeah, he doesn't stick to his conviction for very long because he can't.
Because he's got to win a championship here because that's his job.
Of course. And the whole thing with Lurch. To,
Romanian
yes,
player?
Yes, yeah. the guy from the Jazz who like is supposed to like take the place of Lewis,
right,
which makes
the
no
sixth
sense.
Man who takes Lewis's spot?
Well, okay, but if I could understand if it was the sixth man, but it's the 12th man.
You're right, that's what I'm saying, right?
Right.
If Lurch is the sixth man.
He's also 7 feet tall, so he can't take the place of Lewis.
Exactly.
He's not a shooting guard.
Right.
I don't...
Yeah. He's comedic relief in the movie,
exactly.
right? Exactly. He's a foreign player who comes to America
yes.
who doesn't understand the culture and he's
right.
trying to fit in and he's just kind of silly.
It's so crazy because like some of the best players in the NBA are from outside the US, like today.
Yeah.
But in 1996 it was still kind of novel to have a foreign player on your roster. And just like we see in the movie here, there was a lot of xenophobia about their inclusion. It was like, oh, these guys talk funny and they have a weird playing style.
Yeah.
You know, not the best part of the film.
Right, yeah. But Lurch gets out. Yep.
Yeah.
Lewis is in.
Yes, right.
And the game starts, and they start playing. Lewis isn't doing too great, right? But anytime, like, the Jazz scores, like, Mike and Jimmy are kind of cheering, clapping, little slow claps, little under their breath, you know,
yeah.
cheering for the Jazz. And they kind of get more and more riled up as they go.
Right.
You know? And it's funny to see how they actually start to truly cheer for the Jazz. They
yes.
get confused at one point. They're like, wait a minute, are we really cheering for the Jazz? It kind of shows how cheering for a team is kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, you make what you want out of it.
That's true.
You could do whatever you want.
Right. Right.
It's not like this like conviction you got to die on.
It's a weird place to get to that, like because you feel that it's like unthinkable that you would ever go against your team,
yeah.
Until you do, and you're like, oh wow, this feels very freeing.
Well,
you know,
you have an interesting perspective because you've kind of stopped the whole rooting
yes.
for a team thing,
right? Right.
So you've done that kind of in a way.
I have,
yeah,
completely. And deserves some explanation. What me and Scott keep referring to is like I was so enamored of the Cleveland Browns, you know, from like birth to 2 years ago. And the reason I stopped rooting for them was because they did something terrible.
Yep.
They signed Deshaun Watson, who had been credibly accused of sexual assault by about 50 different women. They gave him the richest contract in NFL history. And even if they hadn't won the Derby because it was them between them and like six other teams, the fact
yep.
that I even saw them in the news trying to make this signing and playing footsie with him, they had already kind of shown their ass in public. So like,
right.
if they had not done the signing or done the trade, I still probably would have had no moral reason to keep rooting for them.
Yeah.
But that when they actually did it, I was like, I'm not a paragon of virtue, everybody. I really am not. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying this to put myself over. I literally cannot root for them.
It affected you that much that you're like, no.
Right.
I just can't do this.
Can't do it. This feels dirty.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And it's really crazy because, like, in the last few years, I've watched them, like, this last playoff, this last year, they went to the playoffs, and, like, I watched them, and I felt nothing. Like, I watched the Texans just, like, absolutely destroy them.
Right.
And I was like, hey, there was some Schadenfreude there, but I also kind of, like, but not too much. I wasn't, like, rooting fully against them. I was just kind of, like, watching them, like, with this detached, weird feeling that I
it's very interesting.
Yes, right.
It's kind of cool too because it goes along the lines of what we've been talking about on the Harry Potter episode, like the can you separate the artist from the art kind of thing too.
Right.
I mean, that's an eternal debate that we'll always have.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just in a sports aspect.
Yes, exactly. And for all the bad things that like sports teams have done over the years, I mean, like we all talk ourselves into, you know, kind of putting our morals aside. And this one was so outrageous that it was just like, okay, that's it.
Yeah, you know? Right.
You just, everybody reaches a boiling point, I guess.
Can we talk about the most unnecessary scene in the movie?
Please.
At halftime, Jimmy wins the Toyota half-court shot draw.
Yeah.
Where he, his seat is the lucky winner.
Yeah.
He can make this shot from half-court. He gets $100,000. And he goes up there, does his Fred Flintstone dance, and wins.
Yeah.
They make such a big deal out of him getting this shot.
Yeah.
And getting the opportunity. It comes out of nowhere.
I know.
And stops the movie dead.
I couldn't believe it was happening because, like, I thought, well, surely they're just going to, like, once the second quarter is over, there's going to be, like, a 10-second thing of them kind of looking at each other like, uh-oh. And then we're just going to go right, like, back to, like, Bill Walton and Marv Albert. Hey, welcome back to the second half, you know? But no, it's 5 minutes of Dan Aykroyd shooting a half-court shot.
Yes, and it means nothing.
No, it doesn't.
They don't set this up for, like, even earlier. They don't mention it earlier.
Uh-huh.
Like, right before he does the shot, they say something like, this has been your dream since we were kids.
Yes.
Or our dream, or some crap like that.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to, like, further push their punishment into the public eye or something to make it an even worse punishment. I have no idea.
And I guess they're trying to make
them... Because
he's
wearing the jazz jersey.
Yeah, because... Like, and both guys are on the floor in, like... And it's weird because they have purple pants on, too.
Yeah.
Like, they're...
Those shorts?
Yes. Yeah, fully decked out in nothing but Utah jazz stuff.
By the way, it's the last year of the Garden's existence also. So that's more pressure on the Celtics needing to win.
Because
it's the last year they're going to be playing here.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
But this scene, it's got to go. Yes. You got it. It's got
to
go.
I know. And it's, as I keep referencing, it's so weird to say that like a 90-minute movie has stuff that you could like take out. But I mean, if the movie was 83 minutes, it would be, okay, yeah, still, let's go.
You can make an 83-minute movie.
That's still feature
length. And people will watch it.
Yes.
Yes. By the way, it's 91 minutes.
Ah, yes.
I looked it up.
Very good.
So it's a little too long then. It is kind of a quick 90 though. Like it does we call it the dragging the saggy middle.
Right.
It's not dragging it down completely though. It's still moving. It's not boring, I wouldn't say that.
No. And anytime a movie is of a decent length like that where it feels it's like, okay, this is about kind of the not the perfect length for a movie, but it's like ideal, you know.
Yeah, right. And I feel like what they could have done is some of those like scenes that are just kind of more of the same stuff. They could have taken some of that out or combined it into the other scenes, right? And then added some of the new stuff we've talked about to kind of develop more of the characters or like help explain the character arcs more, help that stuff.
Right.
They could have kept it at 90 still with that.
Oh, that's right. That's true.
And that would make that would be an excellent movie.
Yep.
You got a nice tight script like that, 90 minutes. Oh, I'm there.
It's a sweet spot.
I'm there, dude.
Right.
So the second half starts. And the Jazz are losing, and ultimately Mike starts yelling to Lewis Scott to start playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, start playing your game. Pass the ball, maybe.
Yes.
No one will expect it.
And like Marv Albert and Bill Walton are amazed at Lewis passing the ball because apparently they've never seen it before.
Yeah, he's never passed it, apparently.
Has he literally...
None of the teammates have seen it.
We're led to believe by what happens in this passage of the film.
Yes.
That every time Lewis touches the ball, he shoots.
He shoots or he's fouled.
Yes.
One of the two.
Now, I have seen many ball hogs in my life.
Yeah.
Both in the NBA and at this, playground level. They do exist. But all of them but all of them have passed the ball at some point, because that's another aspect of showboating is like no look passes,
yep.
Just fancy, ball handling.
Yep.
It's another way of like being, calling attention to yourself.
Yeah.
So like a player like Lewis Scott, who is very flashy, like he would throw a lob pass to one of his taller teammates,
Right. He would. But it is completely ridiculous that no one is ready to accept a pass from him. Like, yes. No professional team would ever, nobody, right?
You're like, in game 7 of the NBA Finals. Presumably other men have scored.
This is like the secret crane technique of the movie, yes, right? Like, it's the secret weapon.
Right, right.
Like, you have to pass the ball. Zoolander has to turn left, Like, that's how you win.
Uh-huh.
So he passes the ball and hits, I don't know the guy's name or the actor's name, but it hits one of their players in the face.
I thought it was Peter Mayhew for a second.
He's tall enough.
He's a very tall man. Yeah.
It could have been a Peter. Maybe it's his son. Yes. I don't know. But yeah, he gets just the ball upside the head.
Right.
Because no one's looking at Lewis Scott. They're ready for a rebound.
That NBA players wouldn't know a pass was coming because this guy, is like Teen Wolf out there. I don't know.
That's awesome. But yeah. For real.
Right.
So he gets, he's out of the game now because he got knocked upside the head by this ball.
Yes.
And they have to put Lurch in.
Right.
Apparently there's only 6 guys on this team.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. Yeah, it just, oh man.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But yeah, the Jazz start to make a comeback because Lewis is being unselfish.
Right. He's learned something,
yes,
Dave.
Yes.
And Mike helped him do it.
Right.
These guys kidnapped him and he learned something.
Oh my God. Oh, this doesn't look good.
Right. So they start making a comeback, yeah. Right? And it comes down to like the last shot, right? And it's a timeout with 8 seconds left. Jazz has the ball.
Yeah.
And Christopher McDonald gives this game plan speech, with the X's and O's.
Oh, dude. And I really, this is my favorite Christopher McDonald moment.
Yeah.
Because, if you ever, back in the college game especially, whenever they would, mic up, you'd get the huddle.
Yeah.
The coach does sound like this.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's just scribbling on this whiteboard.
Yeah.
And it's none of it makes any sense. And the players are just kind of like silently nodding their head.
Exactly.
Makes no sense.
And that's the joke, right?
Yeah,
they're kind
of
like spoofing that whole aspect of things.
Yeah.
The John Madden-ness of it too.
Right. Exactly.
Like with the big lines and it's just scribbled nonsense. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Yep.
So the plan is to do that thing he scribbled.
Yes. Right. And Lewis pulled one of my favorite basketball moves before the timeout, which was when you make the out-of-bounds save by leaping for the ball and then throwing it at an opposing player so that it bounces out of play again and your team maintains possession.
Yes.
Great
it's a
move.
Very good strategic play.
It's so awesome.
I'm sure he's done this plenty of times.
Oh, sure.
But in this moment, it feels like he is being a team player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because of they've shown him change into a team player.
Right.
It's because of Lewis they're in this position, really.
Yes.
Otherwise, it would be the Celtics' ball.
Yeah, that's true.
So, they run the play. It's down to the wire. Jimmy and Mike are, peeing their pants because they're so nervous. They're going to go to jail maybe or maybe not. It comes down to it, and Lurch gets the pass from Lewis, and Lurch gets the layup right at the buzzer.
Yeah.
For a 103 victory.
Yep, 103-102, Jazz win.
Yep.
They win a game 7 in the last game ever played at the Boston Garden.
Yep.
If such a thing happened in real life, I would be like so overjoyed watching arrogant Boston sports fans have to suffer that their cathedral was sullied by a victory by the Utah Jazz.
From this moment on, the Utah Jazz are public enemy number one.
Yeah. It was like that when Texas Stadium, where the Dallas Cowboys played from their inception in 1962 until 2008, the last game played there was a loss on national television to the Baltimore Ravens. And it was wonderful watching, you know, their owner have to come out after the game and, like, you know, do a bunch of, hey, goodbye to the stadium, everybody. It's like, no, yeah, you guys lost your asses and this rules.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that with the Ravens beating them, though?
That was a weird one.
Okay,
Yeah, I was very torn. But I kind of put my hatred for the Ravens aside in that moment because it was just great to watch the Cowboys suffer, yes. You know.
For people who don't know, the Ravens were formerly the Cleveland team.
Yes.
So, right. So, yeah, he hates them. Now. Exactly. Or he did. Now he doesn't care, right?
Now I don't feel one way or the other, but they have a right to exist.
He's evolved. He's had a character arc.
Yes. How about that?
There you go. So Jimmy and Mike are screaming their heads off in the crowd of sad Celtic fans, cheering, "We won. Oh, yeah, baby."
Yeah.
They won the championship. And they run out onto the court. Like they're the press or something.
And there is no security to be found.
This is like, this scene is so quick and over.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really think they need to make the movie longer.
No,
but
of course not.
They need this scene to be a little longer.
And there just needs to be more, more to do about, like, the fact that two fans are on the court in this moment.
They just walk down there.
Right.
They run out to Lewis Scott.
Yeah.
And start high-fiving people and they're, "Hey, you guys, you won. Yay."
Uh-huh.
And Lewis gives them this like mean mug look, you know, like, "What are you guys doing out here?"
Right, right.
And then Kevin is also on the court and he walks up.
Yes. Now he has more right to be there, I guess, because he's a law enforcement official. Which I can't believe I just said that, but okay, you know.
Yes, quote unquote, a law enforcement.
Yes. He's a dirty cop.
He has a badge.
He does, yes.
We'll say that.
That's true, yes.
So he walks up to the three of them. "Mr. Scott, I have reason to believe you might have something to do with these guys." And he's like, "Oh yeah, I know these assholes. They're my friends." Yeah. Like, I don't hate it. But the way it's done, it's like, quick, let's end the movie, hurry up.
I know. And I mean, I never thought that we were going to see, like, you know, Daniel Stern and Dan Aykroyd being led away in handcuffs at the end of the film.
No, I didn't think so either.
I don't think that they really did anything horrible to Lewis while they had him in prison, but they did falsely imprison him. There needs to be some...
There's nothing here, though. It's like, all right, the game is over. Let's try to wrap everything up as fast as humanly possible.
And in that moment, too, like if the Utah Jazz have won their first championship in franchise history, that's a pretty big moment. Their players would not just be like giving like what is a mid-season high five.
I would have loved to see like a Christopher McDonald speech with like the trophy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like they're going to, David Stern's coming out.
That would have been so good.
They're putting a podium up and it's going to be a big, big deal.
Right.
You know?
And make the closure during this, like the ceremony and stuff.
Yeah. Just cut to that.
Yeah. And you get more great Christopher McDonald freaking out.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
right.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
But that's that. And then we cut to like 6 months later or something.
Boy, this coda. Oh my God.
At least it's not like a mid-credits scene.
Okay, that's true, but the movie was over.
That's true.
Like, and okay, so everybody, after the Jazz win the title and everybody makes up.
Fade to black.
Yes. It's my least favorite aspect of the movie. They had a decent ending and they flushed it down the bowl just so that they could shoehorn Deion Sanders into the movie. I don't know who owed this guy a favor, but there he is, just wooden as hell, just like Larry Bird.
Yeah.
And having Mike and Jimmy kidnap another young African-American man.
Oh,
it's starting to not be super funny.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's just, it doesn't, it's not a great look anymore. You
they
know?
Addressed that earlier, though. Like
they did, yes.
Because Damon Wayans is like, what, why'd you do this? Like, is this racism? Like,
right.
He's like, no, if Cal Ripken was in the yes. you know, pennant race, you know, we'd kidnap his white ass.
Exactly. You know? Yes, that's true. Yes. They had to get it out there just to like make everybody aware. Okay, listen.
Right.
It's yeah.
And I believe it though.
Oh, I do too.
Race had nothing to do with it. Like these guys are just psycho fans.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And I do believe they would kidnap Cal Ripken.
Right. But you're true. You're pointing it out. There's a pattern developing
exactly.
here.
Exactly. It just doesn't look very good. Exactly. You know?
And by the way, right before this, when they're all friends at the end of the basketball game,
uh-huh.
Jimmy says, sorry about the kidnapping. I've never done that to another guy.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so how many women have you murdered in your apartment?
And there, yes, I know.
What is
I
that know. Couch made
oh
of?
Oh, my God.
Skin?
Dude, I can't believe that. And they let it hang in the air. Like,
yeah, cause they
like,
all give him a look like,
yeah,
huh?
Damon Wayans and Daniel Sorin kind of go, what? You know, and then it's like, here,
and then
the
it's
music
like,
kicks
oh, wait,
in. Yeah.
Next season, we'll beat you.
Yeah. Exactly, yes. Yeah. Yes. So I don't know what they're implying there. So, yeah, is Dan Aykroyd's character actually like some kind of...
I think that joke is hilarious, but it is a very dark, morbid, twisted joke that might not have a place in this movie.
Well, I guess... Yeah, you're right. It doesn't go with the other humor.
Yes.
Yeah, it's... Wow, yeah. If we're implying that Dan Aykroyd has done some really horrible shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah, I mean, the 90s comedies had a lot of messed up shit in them that
oh, they did,
shouldn't
yeah.
fly.
Right, of course. Yeah. It was a weird moment for this one.
Yeah. But, yeah, so the coda of the movie is they're sneaking in to kidnap Deion Sanders because it's not basketball season. Right? I told Carol I'd never do that again. This is different. This is football season.
Oh, ridiculous, yep. man. Yeah, so. Yeah, terrible.
Whatever. Thankfully, there was no sequel.
Yes, thank God. Right.
Patriot Pride, I guess, would right. be what it's called.
Yes.
But there is a post-credits scene. I don't know if you watched it or not.
No, I didn't. I missed the
post-credits. It's not a scene. It's just they show the garden being destroyed during the credits.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's near the end of
so
the credits.
So it's like real footage of the garden?
Yeah, like they actually showed the demolition.
Okay.
Kinda. Yeah.
Got it.
So, but yeah, that's the movie, everybody.
Okay, yes.
Anything else, Dave?
One of the jokes... I would have constructed it differently.
Okay.
When they went to the club to get Lewis, they used Play That Funky Music by Wild Cherry
uh-huh.
as the main song during their initial encounter.
Yeah.
And we also heard what I feel is a much better song a few minutes later. It was Connected by Stereo MCs.
That song is so good.
I love that song.
I freaking love that, dude.
You know, and I wish that song... was the more prominent one, you know? Because when Jimmy plugs his ears during Game 7 and starts, like, singing to distract himself,
yeah,
it would have been way funnier to hear Dan Aykroyd going, wanna do it again? Wanna do it again? You know? Exactly. Yes, yes. That yeah. would have ruled.
That would have been cool, but I get why.
Yeah.
Play That Funky Music is much more recognizable.
It is.
But it is not as cool, that's for sure.
Exactly. And it just felt a little basic.
Yeah,
know?
Dude. Yeah, that's true.
And then the other thing, if you'd like to see more of Paul Guilfoyle, check out Al Pacino's 1996 film Looking for Richard. This was a documentary where Al gathers his actor friends to stage a Shakespeare film with an exclusively American cast. And Paul stars in one of the completed scenes where it was the assassination of Prince George, Duke of Clarence. And he also starred with Pacino in another movie called The Local Stigmatic.
Not familiar.
I'd love for our listeners in the UK to check out some clips of that movie on YouTube and let us know what you think.
I might have to check it out, Dave, because yes. I'm not familiar.
Yeah, you have to check it out, too.
All right, yeah.
I
know what I'm doing tonight.
Exactly, dude. It's just, I don't want to say anything about okay. it, but I just want people to check it out and let us know.
All right, cool. All right, so would you recommend the movie?
Yeah, I'd recommend the movie. It made me laugh quite a few times, and I think it's okay.
Yeah, I've seen this a million times.
Mm-hmm.
I love this movie. It's got flaws. But, you know, what movie doesn't?
Yes,
so,
of course.
It's a big nostalgia one for me. And even without that, I still think it's a good comedy movie.
Yes.
So everybody check it out. All right, so that wraps things up. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcast. Rate it, review it, and most of all, share it. It gets more dudes listening to the dudes, and you can also go to dudesonmovies.com and find anything you need right there.
Yep, and we're on Facebook, Blue Sky, and Instagram. Look for Dudes on Movies, and our email address is dudesonmovies@gmail.com. Please drop us a line.
That's right, and we're on TikTok too now, Dave.
That's right.
Everybody can check that out and hear some clips of the show. All right, so we got a question of the week. What is the question of the week, Dave?
What sports movies are the most or least accurate?
There you go. Hit us up. Right. Let us know what you think. And stay tuned next week when we do 1990's Pump Up the Volume, directed by Alan Moyle and starring Christian Slater and Samantha Mathis. So until next week, I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And we'll see you next time.